Tonight's shir is dedicated to the Nishmas Avram Yitzchak Ben Yaakov. As we discuss Parshas Kisisa is a jammed-packed Parsha, much to talk about. To most people, the highlight and the main event of Parshas Kisisa obviously is the story of the Chet Ego, to which we still sit today and deal with its long-term effects of such a horrific sin. It definitely dominates for many the theme of the parasha and the ideas of the parasha, but as we'll see this evening, there are many other very important elements, lessons, and messages besides for the Chet Ha'Egel to discuss in this week's parasha. But for many, Parshas Kisisa stands out as the parasha that focuses on the Chet Ha'Egel. But there are many other very important things in Parshas Kisisa. For example, what I'd like to also discuss this evening, Bli Neder, if time allows us, is the Machtes HaShekel, the significance of the Kiyar, the Ketoiris, the special Shemen HaMinshcha, and the Mitzvah of Shabbos, Oile Regel, and again we learn about the Mitzvah of Bas B'Cholov, and we also ultimately learn about the Luchos Shniyos, the second round of Luchos, and we conclude the parasha about Moshe Rabbeinu's unique and special shine, Keren Or, that he had on his face. So it's a very jammed-packed parasha, much to get to, much to learn from, many, many things to discuss. So we'll begin in the beginning of the parasha. Parshas Kisisa, the beginning of the Torah reminds us there's a commandment that we have to give Kisisa Esrosh B'nei Yisrael of Kudehem V'nasnu Ish Kaifer Nafshai. A person will give some form of a Kaifer, the Nafshai, some form of a repayment for his life. V'lo Yeh Bohem Negev. And what is the Pasuk? Ze Yitnu. What should he give? So the Pasuk says, V'nasnu. So the Balaturim points out that the word V'nasnu is read the same way forwards as it is backwards. The same letters forward are backwards. Says the Balaturim, what does the Torah teach us with this word V'nasnu, which means to give? Says the Balaturim, a great, great piece of advice for life. Says the Balaturim, V'nasnu is read both ways, the same letters, to teach me, says the Balaturim, that whenever you give tzedakah, whenever you give away your money, it always comes back. Says the Balaturim, Mash Adam Noisin Litztaka, what a person gives Litztaka, Yachzer Elof, it will always find its way back to him. And he will not lose because he gives tzedakah. Many of us are so hesitant, so fearful to give away our money because we're afraid what's going to be. I'm never going to see that money again. I worked so hard for that money, says the Balaturim. V'nasnu, when you give the letters, read both ways to teach us that the money will always come back to you. It will find a way back to you. You will never lose. On the flip side, there is a halacha in the Gemara, brought in Shulchan Aruch as well, that Ayivaz Vez Yosei Mechaymish, the one is not permitted to give away more than a fifth of his estate. So I thought you're supposed to give as much as you want. So the Mefarshim answer, because the reason why the money comes back to you, the reason why this all works is because it's a nes. It's a miracle. Apiderech Hatev, if a person gives away money, he shouldn't have the money. But because the Kosh Baruch Hu has a miracle system built in, that when a person gives, he gets back. But we have another principle called Ein Soim Chanal Anes. We don't have the right to rely on a miracle. So you have no right to give away so much money, which would then cause HaKadosh Baruch Hu to perform miracles for you. That is not in our way of life. Therefore, you are not allowed to give away more. But keep in mind, when you give away the amount controlled by Chazal, the amount that you're supposed to give, it will be a nace that money finds its way back to you. And so many stories of people who've given away money and found the money has come back even perhaps more than they gave in the first place. The Balatanya points out that the din of Al Yivaz Vez Yosei Mechaymish, that you're not allowed to give more than a fifth, that's only if you're giving it al tzedakah. If you want to give the money as a charity, you want to give to help spread the wealth, give money to others, then you're not allowed to give away more than a fifth. Says the Balatanya, but if you're giving tzedakah because you feel that you need a kapara, you did a certain avera or many averas that you feel you need to fix, improve your lifestyle, fix your behavior, you want to rebuild your relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you're giving the money, not just begedder tzedakah, not just to share the wealth with other Jews who are not as fortunate as you, but you're giving the money for a kapara process, says the Balatanya, then one is permitted to give away more than a fifth. We mentioned men very often, the famous shita of the shita mukubetzes, in Meseches Ksubis, which the Mishnah Berurah paskens this way in his Sefer Ahavas Chesed, that the rule of Ayivaz Vez Yosei Mechaymish does not go on to Torah organizations. For example, if a person wants to support Torah, a yeshiva, a kailol, or anything like that, we don't apply the rule of al yivazvez yoyitzim yichaymish. But nonetheless, the Baal HaTurim is teaching us that when a person gives v'nasnu, when a person gives, the money will find its way back. Rabbi Soloveitchik explained, why is it that staka obtains a kapara? We know we have three famous things that a person can obtain: tshuva, slicha v'kapara, tshuva, tefillah, and staka ma'avir in Israel Exeus. Rabbi Soloveitchik asked, what is so unique about staka that it helps a person obtain a deeper relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu? I understand. A person davens, a person does tshuva. What about giving money? A lot of people write checks. Many people can give away money. People give away money to lower their tax bracket. People give away money because there's certain organizations and causes they feel connected to. Why does that make you closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that the reason why people sin is because we're very selfish. The reason why a person does an aveira is because he has his own self-interest involved. Meaning, he knows a Kaddish Baruch who says, don't do this, don't eat that, but he'd rather focus on his wants, but I want to do it. So my selfish needs gets in my way of serving a Kaddish Baruch. Said Rabbi Soloveitchik, when a person gives tzedakah, charity is the greatest level of selflessness. You're giving away something that is yours. So therefore, explained Rabbi Soloveitchik that although aveira, selfishness leads to aveira, the tikkun for the aveira, how can a person fix the aveira? That's going to be by being selflessness, by giving up of your own, giving your hard-earned money. That's why money, tzedakah, has such a powerful impact. Klapi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because it's showing that you're trying to break that selfishness attitude. It's not all about me, it's about helping others. I'm putting myself second and others first. Reb Shlomo Alkibetz, the famous Monos Levi, also known for writing the famous song that is sung in Jewish communities known as the Chadoidi, but perhaps more famous for his sefer called the Monos Levi. This time of the year, as we get closer to Purim Sheni, the second Adar, we're now holding, just finishing up Shushan Purim Katan. But Mitzvah Shem, as we get closer to the Adar Beis, when we actually celebrate the Yom Tov of Purim, so the Monos Levi, Reb Shlomo Alkibetz, one of the great Gedolei Yerushalayim, wrote a sefer, not Yerushalayim, but one of the great Gedolim in, together with the Beis Yosef, not in Yerushalayim, but nonetheless, wrote a great sefer called Monos Levi on the commentary to Maseches to the Megillah, where many great Chedushim come out. If I'm not mistaken, the way the story goes is, the sefer was called Monos Levi because he was sending it as a present for Shalach Monos, to, I believe it was his father-in-law perhaps, a gift for Shalach Manos. Normally we give food for Shalach Manos, that's the way it says in Shulchan Aruch, but the Manos Levi wanted to give a gift of Svarim to show camaraderie that way, so he gave Svarim. So the Manos Levi explains the godless of the Machtz HaShekel, the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says we give a half a shekel, because if the purpose of the Machtz HaShekel was for Klal Yisrael to be counted, so it would have been much easier to count Klal Yisrael with whole things, instead of having to take everything and cheshbon that you're dividing it by two. If the purpose of the shkalim was merely to count the census to see how many Jews were alive at that time in history, using a half shekel or a half coin is a much more complicated process. So what is the lesson of the half shekel? Says it from Alkibetz, as does many others. The idea of the half shekel is to remind us that we are merely only halves. We as human beings, we as part of Am Yisrael and Klal Yisrael, are only half of the experience. As much as we do, as much as we accomplish in our lives and in our family lives, we're merely only half of the full equation. Klal Yisrael is made up of a bunch of parts, and together we are one whole. So each one of us gives one half to bring home this lesson, bring home the message that we're merely only halves. Each of us on our own, as much as we can do, we're only half of the experience, and we need another half to complete us. And that's perhaps why the Machtz HaShekel was unique in the fact that it was a set rate for all Jews. The Pasuk tells us, the Pasuk says, let's quote it right, the Pasuk says that everyone gave the same amount. The Lashon of the Pasuk is the following. Pasuk says, the usher can't take more and the poor can't take less. Everyone had to give a set rate. Why? Because the purpose of this half shekel was to bring unity. If you're going to have the wealth, you're giving more, and the poor giving less, it's going to affect the unity. You're going to feel that you're better because you're giving more, and you're going to feel that you're worse because you're giving less. It does not help breed unity. Fakert. It's a breakdown of unity. You feel separation. You feel division. There's the wealthy, the haves and the have-nots. So therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, no, this is not going to be decided by your net worth or value. This is going to be every Jew in my book. irrelevant to his portfolio, irrelevant to his stocks and his checking account. Every Jew is the same, and for that reason, I want everyone to give the exact same amount. So a beautiful pshat they bring down from Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld. Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld says, the Mishnah tells us that Be'echod Ba'adur, they would send out messages to let people know about two things. One about the shkolim, and one about getting rid of the klein. So Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld pointed out that probably there's no real connection between these two statements, shkolim and klein. They both were just time relevant. They both were relevant at that time, so they sent out one email to include both things. Points out Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld, maybe not. Maybe the Mishnah is teaching us something very important, that so often in life, the Machzeh Shekel's lesson is we're not a half, we're only a half, not a whole. We have to be completed by someone. So very often we say, so who's going to complete me? Who's going to be my other half? So I'm going to go to anyone to complete me, even if he's someone who's a bad influence on me, or perhaps someone who's not living to the same standards that I live to. That's the klaim. Klaim is an invalid relationship. Klaim were two things that were not supposed to be put together. So although it's so important to have the shkolim, and we're only halves and we need our other holes, but we're so careful who our other half is going to be. We can't just take anyone off the street and say, okay, now you complete me. I'm a Jew, you're a Jew. Now we're a full Jew. No, we have to make sure that the people that we're attaching ourselves to, that the people that we're connecting to make our whole, we have to make sure they're not mixed-breeded people. They're not people that are not right for us. They're not people that are not going to guide us and allow us to go on the right path. And therefore, says Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld beautifully, the connection to the Mishnah and Shkolim, where the Mishnah says that both these two events, on Aleph Adar, they sent out a message to remember the Shkolim and remember the Klayim, because even when you're working with the Shkolim, don't forget Klayim. Don't forget that not any two people should become partners. Not just any two Jews complete a whole Jew. You have to make sure it's a proper background and a proper type of yid that fits your proper lifestyle. There's a cute vart they say on the pasuk Hoshil lo yarbe. What exactly is the trump on Hoshil lo yarbe? So it's a munach revi'i. Hoshil lo yarbe is a munach revi'i. Why? Because it's telling the rich man that you're not allowed to be marbe, because al yivaz veiz yayis mechemish. What does munach revi'i means? It means leave revi'i, leave four, which means you're only allowed to give away a fifth. The other four fifths you have to leave. Munach revi'i, leave the other four fifths, because you're not allowed to spend it. Ha'ashir, you're wealthy. Lo yabe, don't increase a munach revi'i. Don't increase four-fifths. You're not allowed to give away four-fifths. You have to leave munach revi'i. Leave the four-fifths, and the one-fifth you are allowed to give away. A cute pshat in the reading of the pasuk of Ha'ashir lo yabe. The Mefarshim ask a simple question, that if the purpose of the half shekel was a census, so of course, if wealthy people give more and poor people give less, it's going to throw off the whole census. If the entire purpose of this machzeh shekel was really used to count people, so if you're going to have the usher giving three and the poor person giving even less, it's going to throw off the whole numbers. So the first one give an answer that perhaps the ashirim and the anim got together and they each are going to compensate for the other, meaning the usher will give two times more, and this way the math will balance out that it won't affect or sway the numbers. Rashi tells us that Moshe Rabbeinu had a difficult time understanding the Machzeh HaShekel, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him a Machzeh HaShekel from fire. Says Reb David Kviat, what was so difficult to understand about a half coin? It seems to be of the more simplest type of experiences in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a half coin, a half dollar. We have coins, and we have bills, and we have halves, so it's a half dollar. So Reb David Kviat explains, what Moshe Rabbeinu couldn't understand was how can such a somewhat insignificant coin be able to accomplish so much in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Pasuk says, you're giving over a kaifel and amshay. You're redeeming your soul with this. This small coin, a half of a coin, is going to accomplish such a powerful impact. Klap HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what did Hashem answer him? Yes, because look at fire. Says Reb David Kviat, what does fire teach us? Fire can be, you can have a small fire, and it can have deadly impact. Because a small fire can catch and grow, and next thing you know, it's a big fire. No one ever says, oh, it's a small fire, so we need to call the fire department. No, small fires can become big fires. So what HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed Moshe Rabbeinu was, don't be so worried that it's a small number. Small things have deep, perhaps deeper than we think, powers. And here also, although the Machzeh Shekel might have been small, its power goes beyond its value. Rav Moshe Feinstein in his Sefer Dor Rosh Moshe explains that the lesson of the Machzor HaShekel is that very often people feel, why should I bother? I don't make a difference. I don't count. I can't accomplish. Why should I bother doing anything in Yiddishkeit? I'm not a gadol. I'm not great. I'm not destined for greatness. I'm just little old me that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't care about. Comes along the mitzvah of Machzor HaShekel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you know, every Jew, no matter of his situation, no matter of his greatness, no matter of his background, no matter of his financial situation, every Jew gave a half shekel. It makes you feel like, A, you can do everything and anything, and it makes you feel like you all, everyone matters. Every Jew counts in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. From the greatest to the smallest, from the most wealthy to the poorest, to the most chashiv, to the least knowledgeable. Every single Jew counts klapei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the lesson of the Machzor HaShekel is, don't think for a second that you don't count, you don't matter, no one cares about you. And you can't be great. You could be great. Everyone can obtain greatness. But everyone matters in the eyes of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Everyone gave and everyone partake and everyone was counted in the Machzor HaShekel because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every single Jew is precious. The Arachayim HaKadosh points out, what exactly, why is it that only from the age of 20 and above were they counted? What's the magic age of number 20? So the Arachayim HaKadosh writes that the age of 20 is when a person reaches that level of physical and mental maturity. That's the age of 20. And that's why a person is chayiv misa b'dei shemayim at the age of 20. Because 20, you're already enough of a bar seichel, you're enough, we'll call it worldly, mentally, he writes, physically, you understand the world, you have enough common sense, we'll say, and therefore you're held responsible, perhaps even more so than a young child, 13 to 20. And he says that's exactly why they used to go to the army at 20. Rashi says that the magical age 20 was because that's when they went to the army. What's the significance? Because that's when you're mature enough to ready to go to battle for Klal Yisrael. You have enough of, you're educated, you're mature, you are developed enough to be part of Tzva, Am Yisrael, and that's why they would go at that time to go to the war. The Kli Yakar explains that the idea of the Machzor HaShekel is connected to the Chet HaEgel. And he explains the godless of Klal Yisrael's success in survival is the fact that we survive as Klal Yisrael. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at all of us as individuals, we don't stand a chance. Because as individuals, very often our avarice outweigh our mitzvahs. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us as Am Yisrael. He says, let's take a look at Klal Yisrael, my nation, my people. As a whole, Klal Yisrael has a much better chance of coming out with a positive decree than a negative. Therefore, says the Kli Yakar, that's the godless here also. If we look at ourselves as halves, we're going to be in trouble. But we're only halves of a whole. So the message of the Machzor HaShekel is to be mechap and mechad egos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks at us as wholes. We're Am Yisrael. We're not individuals, because we're part of greater Klal Yisrael. And that's our success. That's really our key to success as a nation throughout all our ups and downs, is making sure we're part of Am Yisrael, not that we're a bunch of individuals. When we act like individuals, we get judged like individuals. When we act like one, we get judged as one Klal Yisrael. Right after the Torah describes the mitzvah of Machzor HaShekel, the Torah introduces us to the kiyar, the washing basin that they had in the Mishkan, which was there to provide water and washing for the Kohanim when they did their Avodah. The Chayra one could ask that this should have been in Parshas Truma, when discussing the various Klei HaMishkan, this should have been there as well, but it's in this week's Parsha. And again, the Baal HaTurim points out another great Baal HaTurim. Says the Baal HaTurim, why exactly is the connection between the Kiyar and the Machzor HaShekel? So the Baal HaTurim writes the following statement. Says the Baal HaTurim, Samach Kiyar leParsha Shkolim. The Torah wrote the idea of the Kiyar next to the Parsha Shkolim. Loima to teach me, Shagishavim Netzarim, the rain will be withheld, Bishvil Poiskeit Stoko Ve'enam Noistin. Because of those people who offer tzedakah, they pledge money, ve'enam noistim, but they don't give on their pledge. They pledge a lot of money. When there's an appeal in shul, they pledge big bucks, but they never pay up when asked for it. What exactly is the connection? So I saw a beautiful pshat that when a person pledges money for a cause, let's say you have an appeal in shul, for the shul, for a local organization, for a family that's in need, and you hear the plea, and you listen, and you actually pledge money. Do you know why you pledge money? Because it struck a chord in your heart. you heard the cause, you felt the need, and you gave money because you think it's important. Says the Mefarshim, then you had Rachmanis, but you're not interested in paying. That's worse than a person who never pledged in the first place. You know why he never pledged? Because he wasn't motivated. There was never any Rachmanis in his heart felt. So, he might have a heart of stone, but Lamaisa Rachmanis was never moved in his heart. But this guy, you were moved. You pledged, you got up in shul and raised your hand when the rabbi said, who's pledging? And you gave a number. Because the story that you heard and the pledge made sense to you and it stirred in your heart. And now when it comes to giving, all of a sudden you're not willing to give. That's worse. Because you felt the compassion and you're not acting on the compassion. As opposed to a person who's just compassionless, he doesn't feel anything. Nebuch, he's desensitized. But if you felt it and you got up and you made an announcement and then you're not acting upon it, that's much more severe. The simple shot always in this idea is that the reason why we make pledges is because we like to think, we want people to think we're big. It makes us look great. I get up and show and I pledge $100,000, everyone's going to say, wow, this guy must be really wealthy, he must be doing really well, and I never come through with it. I'm really just putting on a facade. The person is just trying to show off how great he is. But we have to make sure that when we make pledges in shul, the person promises to give money at an aliyah. These are things that happen all the time. We got to make sure we come through on our promises. These are important things that when a person promises to give money to a shul, to an institution, whatever it may be, he should come through on his pledge and not just pledge it, but actually give the money as well. Because I'll tell us that the bottom of the kiyar came from the mirrors used by the women in the Mitzrayim. What would this mean? Chazal tell us that in Mitzrayim, after a long day of work, the husbands were very, very tired and they had very little interest in being with their wives. But the wives knew that if the men are not going to be with them, there will not be a next generation. If there's no children, Klal Yisrael will cease to exist on its own. So therefore the women would have these mirrors to be able to beautify themselves and be able to get their husbands to be with them. Which is those mirrors, which one would have assumed were considered, you know, not tznius, or those are not considered spiritually, those are the exact mirrors that the women used to beautify themselves. Those are the ones that made it into the kiyar. Because of the great Noshim Tzidkanias of that time, the greatness of the women who did not allow Shibud Mitzrayim to stop them from continuing Am Yisrael, from continuing the beautiful legacy of Klal Yisrael, as we'll see a little later this evening as well, another sign of the great, great kayach of the Noshim Tzidkanias of that time in history. Right after the Kiyar, the Torah tells us about some of the Bisamim. So the first one that's very often is called Mor Deror. The Gemara makes a drasha that Mor Deror is a remez to Mordechai. The Gemara asks, remez le Mordechai min atar minayin, and it says Mor Deror. The Gemara says, remez lahama min atayra, and the answer is Hamino Eitz Hazeh. I just heard from a shiur from Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, where he quoted from Rabbi Shechter, a beautiful pshat, about what does it mean, remez to Haman min atayra, from the pasuk Hamin Hazeh, Hamino Eitz Hazeh, from this tree referring to the Eitz Hadas that they were not allowed to eat. So he said over from Rav Shechter, what exactly is the remez? So he said, if you think about it, Adam and Chava were able to eat anything they wanted, except for one tree. One restriction, one tree, everything else is allowed to be eaten. Haman had everyone bowing down to him except one person. One Jew would not bow down to Haman, and that annoyed the life out of Haman. The fact that one Jew was not on board bothered him. So Rav Shechter said that's the similarity. Just like by the Eitz Hadas, Hamino Eitz Hazeh, there was only one tree you couldn't have, and you couldn't control yourself. So you to Haman, there's only one Jew who wouldn't bow down to you, and you couldn't control yourself. That's the connection between Haman and Hamino Eitz Hazeh. Beautiful, beautiful idea. Keep in mind as we get closer and closer to the Yom Tov of Purim. But as we move on, and we start to talk about the spices, so when we're discussing the special spices that were made, so the pasuk tells us, "Vayemer Hashem Moshe, kach l'chosamim notov u'shcheles v'chelbana." Chelbana is one of the famous spices that is described in the Torah. Why is it so famous? Because Rashi quotes, it's actually a Gemara, that chelbana actually had a very, very awful smell. Sherechai ra, the current galbana, was called galbana. So why would the Torah suggest, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want putting into the spices is such an evil, a horrific smelling? So to teach me, don't refrain when you're looking to gather together in tefillah or in fast days, the poishe Yisrael, the sinners, those who smell awful, not physically awful smell, but spiritually awfully awful smell. You should include them as well, which is an important lesson in life. Says Rashi, quoting a Gemara, that the chelbono, it smelled, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, bring it in anyways. I saw a beautiful idea that what happened is that most of the spices or all of the other spices smelled well, chelbono smelled bad. When you have a majority of people doing good, then even the bad, the good rubs off on the bad, and you no longer can smell the evil or the horrific chelbono. What an important lesson in life. When you have a group of people that are doing the right thing, and you have one guy who's not there yet, but he attaches to that group. But as long as the majority of the group is doing the right thing, they will have a much stronger impact on the minority, and they will be able to cause him to become good, bring him back to tshuva. So important when people attach themselves to groups. Some people say, I can't daven in that tshuva, I'm not at that madrigal. Yeah, but if you daven there, you'll become at that madrigal. You'll join their group, you'll follow their ways, and you will become like them. The chelbana changed, transformed into a sweet smelling because it got impacted, it got hashpa from the other spices. The Mashal learns that there were 10 spices that had a good smell, and then there was the Chelbonai. So the Mashal learns that the only time you're supposed to add a Poishi Yisrael to your minion is if you already have a minion of regular 10 good Jews, and then the 11th can be the Poishi Yisrael. But if you only have 9 and he makes the minion, then perhaps he shouldn't make the minion. It's the over story with the Hafla, that the Hafla was once looking for a minion, and the Hafla saw that the minion was 9 Jews, and the 10th was going to be not such a from Yid. And the Hafla said, bring in an 11th. So this not so from Yid was pretty knowledgeable. He turned to the Hafla. He said, what happened to the Chelbana? You told me the Gemara says, Rashi quotes in this week's parasha, he's supposed to add the Paishi Yisrael. So the Hafla answered back with this Marsha. He said, yeah, that's if you have a whole minion without the Paishi Yisrael. But we're short. That's why I brought in number 11. So you can join our minion, because we'll have 10 regular, and you'll be number 11. That was the Hafla's response to that fellow. And right after that, the Keteres, which itself needs a discussion, what is so special about the Keteres, what was the godless of the smell, the scent of the Keteres, it creates a Reach Licheach, what is so special about Keteres, Reb Wolfson in his Sefer Emunas Hitecha discusses an interesting idea about the sense of smell. He says that when Adam and Chava sinned in the first sin of the Eitz Hadas, they used all of their senses except for the sense of smell. The sense of smell wasn't used in the Eitz Hadas. And for this he explains that that's why there's a special chashivas to the sense of smell. It wasn't tampered with, it wasn't touched, it wasn't nifkam, it wasn't affected by the Eitz Hadas. He says that's why both Mordechai and Esther, their names both connect to smell. Mordoror and Esther, Hadassah, are all connected to smell. And he says that the month of Adar is connected to the chaytim, to the nose, the idea of smell. So there's a lot over here about the sense of smell that often we take for granted, the greatness of the ability to smell, and reich nuchayich to HaKadosh Baruch. In this week's parasha, we finally figure out who exactly is the contractor that got the job to build the Mishkan. Who is going to be the one to be chosen to have such an important job as being the head developer of the Mishkan? The pasuk tells us it was a fellow named Bezalel. Chazal tell us he was 13 years old. This boy, 13 years old, just got bar mitzvah, and he's presented with the position of involved of putting up the most important building that Klal Yisrael ever knew of at that time, the Mishkan, the place for Hashras Hashchina, the place that's going to fix all of their Averis of the Chet Egel, and it was given and entrusted to a 13-year-old boy named Bezalel. But when the Torah describes Bezalel, it gives you some lineage. It says he was the son of Uri, who was the son of Chor. Why is it important for us to know that he was the son of Uri and the son of Chor? Because who was Chor? Chazal tell us Chor was the son of Miriam. But what was unique about Chor is that when the story of the eagle broke, we know that the Torah is not read as chronological order. We know that the Mishkan came after the Chet Eagle. So you have to keep that in mind when you're reading Parshas Kisisa, that the story is not in a perfect chronological order. But we know, Chazal tell us, that when Klal Yisrael came to the Chet Eagle, and the Chor stood up and said, no, you're not doing this. This is ridiculous. This is absurd. We're not going to do what you want to do. And they killed Chor. Chor was Moshe Nevesh and died al Kiddush Hashem to protect Klal Yisrael. And therefore, says the Torah, you know, Bischusoi, do you know what happened in his merit? His grandson, Zuchus Ava, is the great power that parents and grandparents give over to their children and grandchildren. Zuchus Ava gave this Zuchus that his Enochel, his grandson, would be the one to build the building that will be the kapara for the chet that his grandfather died over. How appropriate that his grandson be the one who is going to build the building that will be mechaper for the sin that his grandfather lost his life fighting for Klal Yisrael. Such a kayach we often take for granted, the power of his chus avos. We go back generations, grandfathers and great-grandfathers, what powers they gave to us. Who knows why we are what we are today? Whatever we accomplished in our lives, in spirituality, in ruchnius, do we know it's because we had a grandfather and a great-grandfather and a great-grandfather davening for us and praying and doing all he can do and be meis nefesh? And we had grandparents who had to fight Chilul Shabbos and had to fight Kashrus and had to fight everything to be frum at their time in history, and we take it for granted. But perhaps many of our accomplishments, that whatever we are today, perhaps it is because of the great schusim that they had. They say over an unbelievable story about a fellow named David, a non-religious Jew, lived in Eretz Yisrael. He was raised non-religious. His father wasn't religious, and his father was not religious. He was anti-religious. And this David knew nothing about Judaism. And one day he's walking down the street in Eretz Yisrael, and that shul that David was walking in front of needed a 10th man for a minyan. And they pulled David in and said, David, we need you for a minyan. David said, I don't daven, I'm not religious, I don't partake in this. They said, listen, we just need you for a minyan. Please come and join our minyan. So David came in begrudgingly, but he finally joined the minyan. And he sat there and he listened and he partaked in and he was involved in a davening, something which he's never done before. He was mesmerized. He was very intrigued. He went on to learn and study much more. And ultimately, this David, because of this one minyan, became religious. And when doing some family history, David realized that although his father left the fold, his father was not religious, his grandfather was a religious man. And his grandfather would daven in shul every single day for the hatzlacha of his grandchildren. And lo and behold, it was that shul that David's grandfather would daven in every single day, is that same shul that David was pulled in on a random day of the week, pulled in to be joined for the minyan, and ultimately was the key that brought him back to Yiddishkeit. So we never know why what we do today, what we accomplish today, where it came from. It might have been an event that happened 70, 80 years ago. It might have happened from our grandparents, might have done something unbelievable, remarkable, and that might explain what we are doing today, and the reverse is true. What we do today might explain years later why our children or our grandchildren are going to hopefully do great things, be involved in Torah, be involved in Askanas, be involved in Chesed, perhaps because of the things we do today. A very powerful lesson about the godless and the importance of Schos Avos. But if you remember, who was Chor's mother? Chor's mother was Miriam. How did Miriam start off in the beginning of Sefer Shemos? Mesiras Nefesh. She started off risking her life to save Jewish babies. She was Shifra and Pua, together with her mom Yocheved. They easily could have taken off from their job and retired from being nurses and maid and midwives. Instead, they were Mesiras Nefesh to save Klal Yisrael. That Mida was passed down to Chor, passed down to the next generation. The godless of Schos Avos is not something to take for granted. The ability that we can instill in the following generations and then hopefully pass along to the next generations. And after this, the Torah describes the mitzvah of Shabbos. As if we haven't yet learned about the mitzvah of Shabbos, the Torah reminds us one more time that we have to guard and protect the Shabbos. So Rashi tells us, why does the Torah write the mitzvah of Shabbos directly next to the mitzvah of the Mishkan? To teach me that although the Mishkan is so important and it's so valuable, one is not allowed to violate the Shabbos to build a Mishkan. One of the mistakes in the Chet Egel, and perhaps the most important mistake, was that Klal Yisrael was too excited. They didn't calm down a little bit. So we've got to calm down, take it all in, breathe, take the situation. And now that's a midah that sometimes is great and sometimes can be very detrimental. Especially when a person has that midah when he's trying to do something good, not like the Chet Egel. A person gets excited about a cause. He gets excited about an organization. And he's running around like a chicken with that head, not stopping, not thinking. So on one hand, that sounds great, but on the other hand, you say, calm down. You might be making decisions that are not the best because you're not thinking clearly. So here also, the Torah says, I know you're excited about the Mishkan. I know you want to build a Mishkan. I know you want to see a Mishkan. But calm down. It doesn't trump the rest of the Torah. So often we get so caught up in events, we get caught up in important things. Tzarchei Rabbim. There's so many people that get caught up in a lot of very important things and they forget the rest of the Torah is still relevant. There's some people that they are focused on only one thing. They only know one organization and one cause and everything else falls to the wayside. That's not so. The Torah reminds us, yes, the building of Mishkan is so important, but so is keeping Shabbos. So is keeping the rest of the Torah. Someone once came to the Stipler and says he has a lot of difficulty with Emunah. it's a hard time seeing Yad Hashem. Life is so complicated, so many ups and downs. It's very hard to see Yad Hashem. So the Stipe suggested if a person wants to work on Emunah Hashem, he should keep Shabbos. Now, this person was a religious Jew. Says the Stipe, when you keep Shabbos, b'chol dikteh upirateha, with all the details and every halacha, make sure you're doing everything right, and you stop and think about what Shabbos is, that is going to help you with your Emunah. Why is that? L'chayra, the answer is because the whole idea of Shabbos is about Emunah. When a person takes a break from an entire day of work and says, I'm not going to work, I'm not going to do it, and it's going to be provided, that's because I believe in the depth of my heart that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world. So therefore, Shabbos is the greatest tool that we have to be able to attach to this realization of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is running the world and help us grow our Emunah. Reb David Kviat, in his terrific Sefer Sukkas David, points out, why does the Torah write the mitzvah of Shabbos directly next to the Chet Egel? And he tells us that Shabbos has the ability to save us from making perhaps another eagle-like mistake. And he writes, in every generation, in all the generations of Klai Yisrael, we are always presented with eagle-like nisyonis. Eagle-like types of nisyonis. Many people say that was all the different isms. Communism and all the other isms, socialism and other isms that we come across in our lives, often are big nisyonis. And the way we fight these nisyonis is through Shabbos. And he says the reason is because it's the Torah that protects us. So when a person learns Torah and he lives Torah, it gives him the ability to overcome these types of nesheinus. And that's why Shabbos is so special, because Shabbos is a day miyuchad l'limud Torah. When a person learns Torah, he has the ability to be able to fight off these types of nesheinus, these eagle type of nesheinus, and that's why it's so important. We know Chazal tell us that a goy is not allowed to keep Shabbos. Why is a goy not allowed to keep Shabbos? The answer is because Chazal tell us that Shabbos is a matonah from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a gift. It's not a commandment. It is a commandment, but it's also a gift. If something is a commandment, so anyone can listen to the commandment. But a gift is only who the giver wants to give it to. You can't force people to give gifts. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Shabbos is my present. I'm going to give the gift to who I want to. And a goy, I'm not giving it to you. We often lose sight about the importance of Shabbos. It's a matana from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is the greatest gift that we have as Am Yisrael, to have something like a Shabbos. It's a beautiful, terrific way of taking a break from the hustle bustle of life, taking a break from our hectic and crazy schedules, taking a break from our social media and our electronic devices. It really gives us a chance to redevelop relationships with families, with ourselves, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with davening, with learning. It's a terrific day, and it's a matana. We often lose sight that it's a gift, and the goyim can't have it. Sometimes you appreciate something because the other person can't have it. Let's appreciate Shabbos because the goyim can't have it. No, Shabbos is beautiful because we have it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us a special gift that we often need to remind ourselves of. When the Torah describes Shabbos over here, the Torah tells us that you're supposed to work for 6 days and rest on the seventh day. So Rabbi Moshe Feinstein asks, why does the Torah have to tell you to work on the 6 days? Rabbi Moshe Feinstein says, because you have to remember that the Sheish Yomim Yaseh Melacha is not to you. We all come to Shabbos and we rest and we say we're done working. So the seventh day, that's Hashem's day. The 6 days, I'm in control. I'm working, I'm making money, I'm doing well. And Shabbos, I give to Hashem. Says Rav Moshe, no. The 6 days is also Hashem. You know why you make money on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday, Wednesday? Because Hashem said you should make money on Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. Even the 6 days that you work are coming from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're not making that money on the days that you work because you did so. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants it to be that way. So therefore, the 6 days of the week are also coming directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Not just the seventh day, but the 6 days, the days we work, the days we toil, the days we're busy, those are also all matanos from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the bracha of Parnos and the bracha of Atzlach, and whatever happens comes directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Then the Torah writes a famous pasuk that we all know. Says that Shabbos is a special bond between us and the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Kishesh Yom Asa Shabbos Hashem Yisrael Tzvi Yema Shvi, on the seventh day, Shavaz Vayinafash. So on the word Vayinafash, so it's supposed to be broken down as Vay Nefesh. This is referring to Motzi Shabbos, when Klai Yisrael loses their Neshama Yisera. So we say, Vay Nefesh, Oy Vay, I'm losing my Neshama Yisera. So ask the Ger Rebbe, why would you talk about Motzi Shabbos when we're talking about Shabbos? This person is telling you about Shabbos. Why are you talking about Matzah Shabbos? Said the Ger Rebbe, because you need to realize on Shabbos the gift that you have. You're going to lose this gift at the end of Shabbos. So use every minute that you have now. Vay Nafash. Comes Matzah Shabbos, you're going to regret that you don't have it. Make sure you're using it well now. Use the Neshama Yisera well. Use every minute of it. Appreciate what you have. So therefore, the Torah is reminding us now on the Shabbos that you're going to lose it soon, and when you lose it soon, you're going to regret it, and therefore use your neshama yisera wisely. And then right after this is when the Torah begins to discuss the story of the eagle. Pashtus, without getting into all the complicated pshatim, and I can't claim that I really understand the Chet Egel, but the simplest version that most of the Achrayim Rishayim go like is that Klai Yisrael made two colossal mistakes in the Chet Egel. One, as Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky points out, they acted too quickly. They weren't patient. We say patience is a virtue. Klai Yisrael was too quick to judge, too quick to make decisions. They didn't calm down, take it all in, think about it, and process it. Says Rabbi Yaakov, that was the mistake of the Chet Egel. And this is a mistake that we see today, every day in the news, in the media, in politics, where people rush to judgment, rush to conclusions, do not take the information in, don't process it, don't look into it, but right away, quick, make decisions. That, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, was the mistake of the Chet Egel. It was this lack of patience. It was this hasty quickness, running. Don't think, just do. Don't think attitude. That is very against Klal Yisrael. We need to learn how to be patient. We need to make sure we're surveying the situation, taking all the details, process it properly, and act upon it. Reb Chaim Kanevsky was asked what was the greatest midah of his famous Rebbetzin, the daughter of Reb Eliashiv. What was her greatest accomplishment? Again, if you know a little bit about her background, if you read her book about Rebbetzin Batsheva Kanievsky, you'd read what a fascinating life she lived. She would daven, I think, the Sikkim every morning. She would daven, she would take visitors. Unbelievable woman. So you think, what is her greatest accomplishment? So Chaim Kanievsky said right after the Shiva, or perhaps during the Shiva, her greatest accomplishment was the patience that she had to deal with all different types of people. It is very difficult to have patience, especially when we live such hectic, such fast-moving lives. You have to have patience with your family. You have to have patience with small children. If you're an educator, having patience with students can be very difficult. Having patience with coworkers and neighbors is very complicated. But the Torah, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, is teaching us the most important thing is you have to have patience. A.B. Rottenberg came out recently with a CD for kids, a DVD, CD for kids. One of the more recent ones, and there's a whole song all about having patience. Beautiful song to try to teach little kids the importance of having patience. Not just for little kids, it's for us as adults as well. We live in a generation that if the Wi-Fi is not fast enough, we call up and complain. Everything's got to be instant. Says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, that exactly was the mistake of the Chet Egel. Quick. No, go slow. Says Rabbi Yaakov, Chazal tells us that the Mishkan was mechaper on the Chet Egel. Says Rabbi Yaakov, how was the Mishkan mechaper? Because when was the Mishkan completed? The Mishkan was completed on Kislev. When was the Mishkan put up? When did it become open for business? Nisan. Says Rabbi Yaakov, can you imagine the people? They finish it in Kislev, and they got to wait from Kislev to Kislev, Teves, Shvat, Adar, Nisan. How many months they had to wait? Can you imagine? They were on Shpilkas. They said, I don't get it. HaKadosh Baruch, we finished the building. Let's go. Let's have a grand opening. We'll cut the ribbon. We'll invite all the Gedolim. And we'll take pictures. We'll be on front page of the newspaper. Let's get to work. Can you imagine, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, the amount of patience they had to have, sitting day after day waiting until HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the green light for opening the Mishkan? That was the tikkun for the Chet Egel. When you sit down, you have patience, and you don't rush, and you wait it out, and you do as you're told, and don't rush to quick decisions. That's how you're mechaper for the Chet Egel, says Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky beautifully. That is why the Mishkan was the tikkun. Many people ask, how could a generation, a Dor Deya, generation who saw Kriyas Yamsuf, Eser Makas, how could they think that a golden calf that they made is going to be the thing that took them out of Mitzrayim? I remember years ago hearing from a Rav say, it's like you make a pizza, put the pizza in the oven, you create the pizza, and you say, this pizza took me out of Mitzrayim. I just made it an hour ago. How could it have taken me out of Mitzrayim? But that's what they said. This golden calf that we just created took us out of Mitzrayim. How could that be? It's a wild idea. How could they do it? So the answer that they say is, Yeruchim Levavitz, the Mir Mashkiach said this answer is because Kol Godol Mechaveru Yitzrei Godol. The greater you are, the bigger your desires are. We can't understand. These people were unbelievable levels of closest to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the greater you are, the bigger the temptation, the bigger the desire, the bigger the Nisyanus are. Yochum used to say over that he never understood how there were Yidden, there were men who used to leave their families, leave their wives and children, leave their business to come to Kelm to spend Elul in Kelm. They would not just take off a month, leave everything, come to Kelm. Big Nesir Snefesh, that takes a lot. And Ibn Yochum used to say, I don't get it. I see them in yeshiva and they're bottling in the middle of Seder. He said, I don't understand. You used all this Mesir Snefesh. You rearranged your entire schedule, your financial schedule, your family schedule. You left everything to come to Kelm and you're wasting your time. He said, because same thing with the Chet Egel. These are great people and they had great levels of Emunah. We don't understand what it's like. The greater you are, as we say, the mightier they fall. Asks the Chofetz Chaim, Chazal tell us, Rashi quotes it, that Moshe Rabbeinu was delayed. And the Satan didn't exactly help the cause. He made it look like Moshe Rabbeinu died. And once the Klal Yisrael saw Moshe Rabbeinu died, they completely gave hope and said, we need to move on to another person. Asks the Chofetz Chaim, if the Bnei Yisrael saw Moshe Rabbeinu dead, why didn't they mourn his passing? Why didn't they sit on the floor and start crying, our leader is gone? Shouldn't that have been the first instinct of the Jewish people? Their leader that's been with them through thick and thin, from the beginning, through it all, and now they see in Shemayim he's dead, the first thing they think about is, let's replace him? The first thing they should think about is, we got to mourn over his loss. The first thing is, who's the next guy to take him over? The Meshech Chachma asks a similar kasha. If Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer available, so who's next in line? Aaron HaKohen. Why this golden calf? If you're going to use anyone, if you're going to replace Lahavdil Moshe Rabbeinu, so find a proper replacement. Aaron HaKohen. Aaron was second in command. He was the vice president. If you're going to replace Moshe Rabbeinu, at least replace him with Aaron. Secondly, ask the Chofetz Chaim, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, after the Chet Egel, that I'm scratching this nation, I'm starting again with you. Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, don't start with me. I want you to continue with Klal Yisrael. Says the Chofetz Chaim, I don't get it. Moshe Rabbeinu should have said, great. These people don't care about me. They totally didn't even care that I died. Says the Chofetz Chaim, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, okay, great, let's forget these guys. Me and you will start again. Says the Chofetz Chaim, because Moshe Rabbeinu is a true leader. A true leader is not about his ego. It's not about his feelings. It's about leading for the people. So relevant in a world that we live in today, in the time that we live in today, where everyone's fighting to be the president, to be the senator, to be the governor of various communities, and you looked at all of them could care less about the people that they're leading. They care more about themselves, their ego, their legacy, their feelings. Moshe Rabbeinu was a real leader. It wasn't about him. He wasn't insulted that they didn't mourn him. Moshe Rabbeinu never took it personal. It was all people, what Moshe Rabbeinu could do for the people. Because Moshe Rabbeinu, says the Chofetz Chaim, is a true manik. He's a true leader. Not like what we see today from politicians that just want votes, just want covered, and really just want money. Moshe Rabbeinu embodied a true leader, true role model for Klal Yisrael, what leaders are supposed to be. We mentioned earlier the great women of this generation. Chazal tell us that Aaron HaKohen figured that if he asks the men to get the jewelry from their wives, and what happened is that the women said, absolutely not, I'm not giving you my jewelry. And Chazal tell us, to be shining, bring it down, that b'schus noshim tzidkanis, that the women did not give their jewelry, they got a special gift called Reish Chodesh, that every month women have a special connection to Reish Chodesh, b'schus, that they did not give up their jewelry. What exactly was the reason why they didn't give up their jewelry? Because the women had a much deeper emunah. They believed that this didn't make any sense. This was illogical. They were much more thought out than the men. They did not rush. They were not quick to judge. They were more thoughtful. And because of that, they were zeicha to overcome the nesayin of the egel, and they did not partake in the egel. Another sign of noshim tzidkanias of that generation, they did not get involved in the chet egel. So what happens? They finally, after Aaron tries to buy time, and Aaron tries to do as best as he can, ultimately, what ends up happening is Klal Yisrael sins with this Chet Egel. And the Pasuk tells us they got up the next day and they brought karbanos to it. They ate and they drank. So Rashi says that this Litzachik means they did Gili Arayis. So the question is, where's the Gili Arayis from the Lashon Tzachik? So the Chofetz Chaim writes that Gili Arayis was from the fact that they had, later on the Pasuk said they had Mechulos, they were dancing. Says the Chofetz Chaim, dancing was mixed dancing. That's already Begeder Arayis. That was one of the Chofetz Chaim's campaigns that he writes about often in his Sefer Halacha, He was very, very against mixed dancing. He was trying to very, very come down very strongly on the movement of mixed dancing that was starting at that time in history. And he said that's Pshat on the Pasuk as well. So what happened? Moshe Rabbeinu was up in Shemayim. And Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Moshe Rabbeinu, we got a problem. Pasuk tells us that Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Vayidaber Hashem Moshe, Lech Reid, you got to go down, Kishichas Amcha. They're destructive. They went off the path. We got to go down. So what happens? Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going to go check it out. What do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu, you go check it out. Hashem told you what happened. So Chazal say, we learn from over here that Moshe didn't, that you don't believe in Eid Echot. You can't believe one witness. There's rules. You need two witnesses. So therefore, Moshe Rabbeinu was teaching Bnei Yisrael that he went down himself to see what was going on, to teach Klal Yisrael, you don't trust one aid, even if that one aid is a Kaddish Baruch Hu. Asks Reb Henoch Leibowitz in the Sefer Chedush Alev, why now? Moshe Rabbeinu wants to teach Klal Yisrael a halacha and hilchos eidos and chesh mishpat. Now is not exactly the right time for educating the Jewish people. Now is the time in saving the Jewish people. Says Reb Henoch, a beautiful idea. Every moment is a teaching moment. So important. So many times things happen in our lives when we interact with people or specifically our children, and it's a teaching moment. But we say, now is the time. That's what a teaching moment means. When you're caught up with the daily things in life, it might not be the best time for a classroom lesson. It's a teaching moment. When you have a chance to educate whatever is going on, it's always a teaching moment, always a great time to be able to educate the next generation. But what does the Pasuk say? What was Moshe Rabbeinu the most upset about? So the Pasuk says, Moshe Rabbeinu was upset about, Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu that they made an eagle. The fact that they made an eagle. The question is, what do you mean they made an eagle? Shouldn't the anger be over the fact that they worshipped the eagle? Not the making of the eagle. So the Mepharshim say that Moshe Rabbeinu wasn't so much upset. Those who bowed down to the eagle were the Erev Rav, and they were killed. Moshe Rabbeinu was more upset about the fact that the rest of the people saw the making of the eagle and they didn't stop it. The fact that no one else besides Fechor protested this type of behavior, although let's say they didn't bow down, but the fact that no one else was involved in stopping this, that by and large was what angered Moshe Rabbeinu very, very much. Farshim also say, what bothered Moshe Rabbeinu is when it came down. And the Pasuk tells us, Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, what does he see? He sees the eagle and the mecholos. Says the Mepharshim, Moshe Rabbeinu can understand Klal Yisrael has a bad judgment, a breach in common sense. But mecholos means circles. It means you're happy with what you're doing. So often in life, we nebuch do averis, and we regret it, and we feel terrible, and we're embarrassed. We don't celebrate our averis. Here, Klal Yisrael was celebrating it. Oh, you're celebrating what you're doing? That's what angered Moshe Rabbeinu. I understand we all have our moments where we slip and we make mistakes and we do averus and we regret it and we feel horrible. But to do an avera and be proud of it, to rejoice in the avera, that was the taina on Klal Yisrael. The Daz Zakenim asks, why was it that Bnei Levi did not partake in the eagle? So Daz Kenan gives two very interesting answers. Answer number one is because Bnei Levi are relatives to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was their relative. They felt much more loyal. We can't go against Moshe Rabbeinu because he's our family. We have a built-in loyalty. But then he gives a second answer. He says because Shevet Levi represented the Loim De Torah. Although we think of Yisachar as the Loim De Torah. But who went down in Mitzrayim to Goshen? That was Levi. Levi was involved in the building of Torah. And therefore when you have Torah, you have the ability to overcome these type of nesianis. The godless HaTorah, the power of Torah, is what enables a person to overcome all the many nesianis in life, is when he has the Koyach HaTorah. The more Torah we learn, the more we have protection from types of averus. Rabbi Fran makes a very interesting observation that if you look in the Torah, when the Torah describes the Luchos, so the first time it describes the Luchos in Perek Lamed Aleph, it gives you very little detail. Then in Perek Lamed Beis, where before Moshe Rabbeinu is about to smash them, then it gives you much more detail. So there, my friend, this is a lesson in very often in life, we don't appreciate things until it's gone. After the Luchos were gone, then we start realizing, oh no, this was such a beautiful thing. It was so amazing, it was so detailed, it was so unique. Oh, now it's gone. Very often in life, we don't appreciate things until it's too late, and then they are already gone. There's more to get to, we'll just leave off with one last vart. that when Moshe Rabbeinu goes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to get Slicha V'Kapara, so the line that the Torah tells us is V'richamti Es Asher Arachem, which Hashem says, I will continue to have Rachmanis. What does Hashem says, I will continue to have Rachmanis, which means I'm going to be a Baal Chesed many times. I'm not going to do Chesed once, I'm going to continue to do Chesed with you, over and over and over. We too as Jews have an obligation to do Chesed with someone not only once, but continue to do Chesed. Very often we want to help someone once and never be bothered again. I helped you once, leave me alone. So Hashem, no, I help you over and over again. I want you to help over and over again. Just like if someone comes into your store, you say, oh, you were here yesterday, why are you here today? You want them to come back. That's what a good customer is. So too, when it comes to chesed, we want to have repeated customers, we want them to come back. Although it's very difficult. We have to live the lifestyle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu has chesed for us so many times, we too have to have chesed for others many, many times over and over, and we need to have them as repeated customers.